Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we welcome in our good friend Caroline Fenton to the program, as she does every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, host of Caroline, Willie, and D. Mace. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great. Happy to be with y'all.
Happy to have you with us. We're discussing the NFL draft. There's a lot going on in terms of just the pre-draft process here. We had Feldman on from The Athletic yesterday talking about Joe Alt, how much of a gap is there between him and some of the other left tackles here in this draft. Based on a lot of people he's talked to, he thinks a pretty significant one. So my question for you, Caroline, is this. What happens if you're the Titans and you've graded this whole thing out and Joe Alt is clearly the best left tackle on your board, but a Malik Nabers or a Roma Dunze is also there and you have them graded as the better player than Joe Alt? What do you do with that situation if you're the Tennessee Titans?
That's the question. And that's something that we've been talking about, you know, for the past like weeks and months, right? And here's how I view it. Do you have Joe Alt as your fifth best player and Malik Nabers as your fourth best player? Like, it's just the difference is inches. That is a razor thin margin, and you view them both as a toss up, pretty much. Well, then I think that's where you have to come to weigh need. That's where you have to think, okay, if we take Malik Nabers, because we view him as, you know, our franchise wide receiver, what's the path to our left tackle? Can we live with taking a Patrick Paul from Houston with the 38th overall pick, and we think that he can be our left tackle of the future? If that's the case, if you view a path to your franchise left tackle, and you view that if you can wait on the left tackle and Bill Callahan can coach him up to be just as good as how you might view Joe Alt or Olafashnu or J.C. Latham, then I think that you can feel comfortable taking the receiver. Because let's go back to what Brian Callahan said. If all things are equal, I'll take the elite touchdown scorer over the elite non-touchdown scorer. But that's also considering all things are equal.
Right.
Assuming that all things are equal. There's no guarantee that all things are equal. I almost feel like the Titans are in a position where they have to take the left tackle. And I don't like being in that position, because I think when you start to pick for need, especially with the seventh overall pick, especially with the first round, in your first round, you put yourself in a position where you're leaving talent on the board. You put yourself in a position where the Titans take Corey Davis with the fifth overall pick and leave Patrick Mahomes on the board because you thought that you had your franchise quarterback moving forward. So I don't like that the Titans are in that position, but also if Joe Alt is that prospect where he is the best left tackle by a wide margin, where that he fills a need right away in day one, that left side is locked down and Will Levis is taken care of, and he's coached up by the best offensive line coach in the NFL, and he's going to be that guy that's not causing a problem. He's just going to come in, do his work, and be great and, you know, check left tackle for the next 15 years. That's also pretty appealing.
Okay, your Corey Davis Mariota comment. Okay, here's a scenario.
It's not a perfect example, but.
No, it's a great example in terms of Corey Davis as a need pick. No doubt. That is absolutely not. It's just that like Mahomes was so – like Mariota was off his best year. People – like everyone thought Mariota was – of course. Like no one even mentioned Mahomes' name one time. So let's go – let's say the Titans have J.J. McCarthy as the top player on the board when they pick and he's there. Should they take him?
The Titans?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a very, 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 very hard time believing that J.J. McCarthy is the best player available to the Titans at seven.
I would agree.
Hard time believing that. So I can't even, I mean, if that's the best player on their board, then yeah, I think you have to consider it. But also, I feel like we're living in fairy tale land if that's the case.
Yeah.
I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be, like, and if he turns out to be, let's say, if the Minnesota Vikings trade up to, you know, eight with Atlanta to take J.J. McCarthy and he ends up being their franchise quarterback, then I'll be proven wrong. But I think that J.J., like, there's going to be a general manager that talks themselves into J.J. McCarthy being a franchise quarterback, and I think that might be a Very bad decision for that on the general manager's part.
So we've determined you're a JJ hater.
A JJ-ter, if you will.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I don't see it with JJ McCarthy. I really don't. I don't think that he had to do anything at Michigan to elevate everyone else around him.
I think
it was the run game. I think it was the defense. I think JJ McCarthy was more so a passenger.
So let me ask you this, Caroline, because this is another interesting kind of tidbit here heading into the draft. You know, J.C. Latham apparently visited with the Titans yesterday. There's a lot of talk about him, and obviously he played right tackle in college at Alabama. Mm-hmm. So could he switch to left? Is he going to be a right tackle? What's that going to look like at the NFL level? I don't know. To me, though, like if you're taking him where they're at number 7, you better be pretty darn convinced he can play left tackle. I realize that right tackle is a need, but like to me, if you're going tackle at 7, I think it needs to be a left, and that's just my preference. Maybe the Titans disagree with that, but I think unless you're planning on going tackle, which I guess they could in the first round and then the second round, I feel like the Latham part of this, unless it involves a trade back, I don't really want any part of that if he's going to be a right tackle.
If you're taking an offensive lineman at 7, it needs to be your left tackle. Like it needs to be the left tackle. And I asked TD this yesterday because the Titans hosted J.C. Latham for a visit. I asked TD if he thought that J.C. Latham could move over to the other side, understanding that it's really easy for me to say, well, just move to the left.
Right.
But it's there's a lot more to it than that. But TD said, yes, he could move over to the left side. Bill Callahan does have a history of moving college right tackles over to the left side and being, you know, fairly successful in doing so. I'm with you, though, Robbie, that if, let's say, Joe Alt goes off the board at 5 and J.C. Latham is your best graded offensive lineman at 7, I think that you could afford to trade back a little bit. Also, assuming that you have a trade partner.
Right.
Assuming that Minnesota at 11 or Denver at 12 would be looking at 7 to trade up to take a quarterback, which is a likely scenario, I would have a hard time stomaching J.C. Latham at 7 just because I don't think that he is the 7th best prospect in this year's draft. That's where I think we can have more of a conversation of J.C. Latham and Malik Nabers both available. I would lean more toward Malik Nabers because I think that he is more so the 7th best prospect in this draft, more so than J.C. Latham. But also Olufashinu was in the conversation. I asked TD about kind of ranking the left tackles in this year's draft, and he said he feels that there's kind of prospect fatigue with Fashinu, that everyone's been nitpicking his game and just searching for something to say, like, oh, this is a negative thing about him. So that would be one that I would at least entertain at 7, but would more so feel comfortable with a trade back taking a Fashanu or a Latham at 11 or a 12 or so on and so forth.
Yeah, it does kind of seem like Fashanu. I mean, I think this season may have hurt him, though. Like, again, like Feldman's piece, you know, some of these coaches who saw him, they did talk about him struggling to anchor and things like that. I mean, I think there seems to be a difference, but now that would be a fascinating scenario.
Even look, like, I will take
like
their
a Dallas
word for
Turner.
It.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's.
I don't evaluate offensive linemen. If that's what the opposing coaches said, then I will take your word for it.
One thing you do have for sure is like sometimes you have a prospect going into a season, everybody thinks there's something, and then there's a whole bunch more film, right? And so people are like, well, how did the heck did that? Well, it's like, well, actually, because like the film wasn't kind in some spots. But yeah, I mean, well, it's the same for me. Like I don't have any idea, but it does seem like fewer holes are poked in Alt's game, you know, overall. But like that scenario would be where like a Dallas Turner, for example, like let's say that the receivers are gone and Dallas Turner is your top. I mean, that's not at the top of need. I don't know if he's that great of a player, but maybe the Titans think he is, right? Like it could go all sorts of directions, I guess, if it got to a certain scenario.
If it goes edge rusher, I have no problem with that whatsoever. Because we're talking about left tackle being the most glaring need, and I think that is fair and obvious that, yes, left tackle is the Titans' most glaring need, but it's not the only one. Like, if you view Dallas Turner as your next, you know, like that plug-and-play guy, that can be a disruptor on the defensive line. Like, let's not forget, the Titans lost 11 sacks with DeNico Autry.
Yeah.
I feel like we're not talking about that enough. I feel like that's something that just kind of gets brushed under the rug as we talk about the offensive conversation. And I understand why. This is the offseason of Will Levis. You bring in an offensive head coach. The offensive line is atrocious. I understand why the offense is at the forefront of the conversation, but you're going to have to replace those sacks somehow. That, yes, you've got Harold Landry and Jeffrey Simmons, but last season and the seasons in the past, the reason why that defensive front was so disruptive and was such a game changer for the Titans was because it was Simmons, Landry, and Autry. So if it ends up being a Dallas Turner, like, I have no problem with that. But any position that's not left tackle, I will have to couch it with the question of where are you going to get your left tackle? And if it's at 38, is that left tackle at 38 going to be as reliable and have as much longevity as a Joe Alt or one of these first round prospects? And maybe it is. And maybe that's the perfect scenario that you find an edge rusher and your left tackle at one and two, and boom, you're taken care of.
Could be. It's going to be really fascinating. Thankfully, we're less than 3 weeks away now, so we're getting close, Caroline. We're almost there. Appreciate so much you taking
We're
time
almost there.
to be with us this morning, and we'll be listening at 11 o'clock.
Rajon Rondo to Kentucky?
That's some people are saying. Some people are
That's
saying.
what they're
Okay.
saying.
I'm
That's
here
what Boogie
for it.
Cousins is
Yeah,
saying.
Boogie Cousins threw it out there. It's like,
Yeah.
okay. See how that
Boogie
goes.
Cousins would not be my athletic director at my university, but pop off king.
Cousins, associate head coach. All right.
That would be interesting. Not
It
successful, I don't believe, but interesting nonetheless.
There's no question about that.
We need more drama in men's college basketball.
We do. Caroline, thank you very much.
Appreciate y'all.
Caroline Fenton joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock. That was a interesting idea floated out there by Boogie Cousins. We'll take your thoughts on the draft. React to what Caroline had to say. 615-737-1025, including a trade scenario that Bruce Feldman brought up yesterday that I think is really interesting to think about that I don't think a lot of Titans fans are thinking about. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Score big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play Giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 towards Lee Company Home Services. All you got to do, visit leecompany.com/giveaway in order to enter. Once again, that's leecompany.com/giveaway. In the 10K Power Play Giveaway, contest entries are accepted until Saturday, April the 20th. Lee Company, all you need. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Appreciate Caroline Fenton for being with us in the last segment. We'll have Alex Doherty from the Tennessean coming up at 8 o'clock to get into the Predators and a huge game for them tonight. So looking forward to that. Joe, a trade scenario that I think is really interesting here. You know, everybody's going to talk about Minnesota moving up, Denver moving up, maybe Vegas moving up to get in the quarterback sweepstakes. What about Chicago at 9? So Chicago will have presumably already have taken their quarterback at number 1 overall, probably Caleb Williams. And I would assume they're going to want another weapon or two to go with him on that offense. And look, they've got DJ Moore there, and that's great. He played really well last year, but they need more receiving help. And if you're Chicago, I would imagine, Joe, the idea of one of Neighbors, Adunze Harrison, be pretty darn intriguing to pair with Caleb Williams. So, like, if you're the Titans, and let's say either Alt's off the board at 5 to the Chargers, or the situation plays out where you've got one of those receivers sitting there, and maybe Alt's gone, and you're looking at the choice between a Neighbors or a Latham or an Adunze and a Fuaga, like whatever the scenario is, and Alt's gone at that point, would you consider trading back and going with Chicago moving up from 9 to 7 to get in there and jump ahead and take one of those receivers? And I'll even throw another one out there. Like, let's say they get through the first 6 picks and it goes 4 quarterbacks, 2 receivers, and there's Neighbors and Alt on the board. Could you, if you're the Titans, could you trade back to 9 with Chicago and still end up landing Joe Alt at number 9? Like, could you do that if you're the Titans? It'd be a risk, but could you do that?
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. The idea of being able to move back just a little bit, pick up a pick, and then still get your guy. Again, you say all these scenarios, and then I'm not sitting there looking at the. I mean, I should have this memorized. Who's eight again?
Atlanta, your boy Kirk.
Yeah, yes, Kirk's there, so obviously they're set. And I'm trying to, like, what's Atlanta doing? What's Atlanta doing in this draft? I know a lot of people. I've heard a lot of, like, Dallas Turner
A lot of Dallas Turner.
talk, a lot of defense talk. So yeah, you might be all right. That, I mean, that's a great scenario. The scenario of getting alt and being able to pick up a little bit more draft capital
It
is a
seems almost unrealistic, but it feels like Chicago, like the idea, I would assume, like if you're the Bears, the idea of grabbing one of those three wide receivers would be pretty darn intriguing.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, they got DJ Moore. That's a big time pickup. But and I have no idea if this person on the text line, and I've lost him. It was way earlier in the show, is telling me that Jared says the Titans receivers are below average or something like that. I mean, the Titans have DeAndre Hopkins and they just picked up Calvin Ridley. I would disagree if that's truly what he said. I don't know if it is. So, sometimes he gets misquoted on our text line. Some people seem to have a grudge against young Stilly, but whatever he said, you could look at the Titans receiving core with Hopkins coming off another fantastic year. He's a Hall of Famer, older, but he's a Hall of Famer, and Ridley, who is absolutely a number one receiver, talented receiver, and still say we're talking about them getting more receivers, right? I mean, in part because obviously Hopkins isn't going to be here forever. He's probably here for one more year. But just because the Bears have DJ Moore, doesn't mean that they wouldn't benefit greatly from giving him a young, rookie deal, top shelf receiver. I mean, that would be tremendous support for him. So I could see them being interested. Again, they have to be totally in love with the guy in question. But I don't know. I don't know if that's as unrealistic as I initially would think.
Well, it just feels like with the draft capital that the Bears have accumulated here. Hey, look, we saw it last year, right? And it's a different scenario, and it would be a different way of doing it. But like last year, Houston was unbelievably aggressive, right? Like they got Stroud at two, and then they traded right back up to three and got Will Anderson. And I'm not saying that that's going to be like the formula for all these teams moving forward, but Houston had a ton of draft capital. They used it to their advantage. Chicago has traded, left and right to acquire some of these draft picks. Last year, they traded away the number one overall pick. I mean, they've got options here, I think. And if you're looking at their offense, the idea of pairing a Malik Nabers or a Rome Odunze with Caleb Williams, I think, is a really intriguing option. So, look, if you're the Bears, maybe you're looking at it and you say, all right, let's say four quarterbacks go, and then the Chargers take a receiver, the Giants take a receiver. Well, we think the Titans are taking a tackle, and we think Atlanta's taking a defensive an edge rusher. So maybe they feel like they don't have to trade. But I just think the idea, I think the possibility of them moving back up from nine is a very real one in this draft, and I wonder if the Titans can be the team that takes advantage of that.
Yeah, that's the, I guess it's almost like, I guess basically the concern. I mean, you could make the case for, well, you made the take case of the Falcons to take. So the receiver would be what? Probably a Dunze, right?
Probably, although, I mean, Feldman and the people he's talked to, they love Odunze, and they've got him over Nabers.
Over neighbors, yeah. But let's say it's Dunze. You could believe that the Titans might be tempted to take him there. If you're the Bears, you could. I mean, the Falcons, certainly
They could
London's
use
a,
him.
yeah, I mean, he's a good player and Pitt's a good player, but again, it's like all these teams, it's the same thing that we talk about with the Titans. What's your big board tell you? And if they think he's that great, they could believe that either of those teams ahead of them might take him. So maybe it's worth doing. They've, like you said, they've done a lot of wheeling and dealing, picked up a lot of draft capital. And that is, it's like, you're right. Draft capital is great. You need to, some of these rosters need rebuilding. The Titans are in that situation, but the opportunity to get actual great players, people you believe will be great players, sometimes you really have to push your chips in on that.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. More of your thoughts on the NFL draft. We'll also get to the latest in the Kentucky head coaching search as well, coming up next. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell, Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keyser here with you. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up at 7:45. Alex Doherty from the Tennessean will join us at 8 o'clock. Looking ahead to a big one tonight between the Preds and the Winnipeg Jets. Joe, the text line is abuzz with reacting to Stillman apparently calling the Titans receiving core below average yesterday. Zach in Nashville did circle around and say, as he talked through it, he backed off below average and ended up with them just being average. But he did say that Kirk slash Gabe Davis is a Ridley D-Hop, a wash, kind of like the same there with Jacksonville. So he backed off of below average, apparently.
Kirk Gabe Davis is the equals Ridley D-Hop, huh? Hmm.
I guess so.
This is the danger of your own of a 4-hour show solo, man. This is the danger. That's a lot of talk. Like I don't. I think there's a gap between those two. Wouldn't you say?
So, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I would say so. Interesting.
With all due respect to Christian Kirk.
Yeah, I mean, hey, you know, we've been ripping the Jags for Christian Kirk since they signed into that deal, and it has worked out pretty well. I mean, he's a pretty good player. Gabe Davis there is going to be interesting. I don't know. Gabe Davis makes some big plays, but. I got to say, you know, someone also came on the text line talking to us about Keenan Allen of the Bears, which yep. is true. They signed him, and I am very skeptical of him. To be fair, a year ago, I had the exact same skepticism for D-Hop, and I was totally wrong. So, you know, so we'll see. I mean, I just feel like that's not a reason to not take if you believe you got a chance to get a great receiver.
Oh, I agree.
To be on a rookie deal with Caleb Williams, I got to think that's very appealing to them. Not that they don't have other needs as well, but I think there's got to be some appeal there.
Well, and, you know, Keenan Allen, he played 10 games in 2022. He played 13 games last year. He'll be 32 years old later this month. So, look, he was great last year, right? I mean, he had 108 catches for 1,200 yards in 13 games, which is kind of amazing. Like, that's a ton of catches in 13 games and a ton of yards. But does that start to go the other way? And I'm with you. Like, if I'm the Bears, you're hoping that you get that and you can add another receiver to it. So, and you've got DJ Moore. Then I think a lot of, and you're seeing the Titans do this. You're seeing definitely the Texans do this. When you've got rookie quarterbacks coming in, I think the mindset, which is why some of the commentary around the Titans this offseason from a national perspective has been so weird. Like, people almost like aghast at, like, why are the Titans making moves? Like, why are they signing Calvin Ridley? Why did they get Tony Pollard? Why are they doing all these things in free agency with Will Levis? They don't know if he's any good or not yet. And it's like, well, that's why you do it. You surround your quarterback with as good of a talent and as good of a roster as you can have, and then it helps you make your decision. Like, to me, if I'm the Bears, I'm trying to put Caleb Williams in the best possible position and then see what you got after that.
Yeah, and beyond that, it's just, again, in this league, like, there's no long rebuilding plan.
No.
It doesn't exist. I mean, you do that and you can just stink for a while if you want, but yeah, you got to get good football players. If you have the cap space to sign good football players, then you should do that. And yeah, it's not just, and that's a thing I think a lot of the league doesn't get, is it's not just the Titans are like, well, let's find out about this kid. It's that the Titans saw enough last year to think, yeah, he actually could be who we want him to be. It's beyond the, it's not full embrace, like, oh my gosh, watch out NFL, but it is definitely more than I think the rest of the league gets in terms of how they feel about him in the building based on what they saw from him last year on and off the field. So we'll find out, and they'll find out. They're not certain, but they have more conviction on him than I think the league understands. I see all these QB rankings out there, and it's like he is like, and I know it's, I don't know, was it like FanDuel had one maybe? But it was like, you know, he was ranked like 31st or 32nd behind like projected, you know, like Michael Penix ranked ahead of him in some ranking, yeah. You know, and I mean, it's like, okay. That's just how the league feels. Titans quarterbacks, let me tell you, they are
a lot
are
of disrespect.
Just, yeah. Did you see the thing with Tannehill? It was like former Miami Dolphins 4,000-yard passer could go to the Bears. Yeah. I don't even know whose report it was, but I saw it on Twitter. And it was like, wow.
Do you realize he still played in the league?
Completely erased him going to the AFC Championship game, huh? Yeah, okay.
Joe, we began the show by talking about UConn-Purdue. Danny Hurley, obviously Kentucky fans really want him to be the coach. There's a couple of names they've identified. He said last night, no way to Kyle Tucker that he's going to Kentucky. Nate Oates put out a statement yesterday saying he's staying at Alabama. Jay Wright was asked on the TV broadcast last night if he would be interested in coming out of retirement to coach Kentucky. He said no. So I'm looking at betting odds right now from Bet Online to who's going to be the next men's basketball coach at Kentucky. Scott Drew from Baylor, the favorite, at plus 100. Nate Oates still at number two at plus 300. Billy Donovan at plus 600 is number three. And then Richard Pitino from New Mexico, plus 1,000 at number four. What do you make of the options that are still left and out there for Kentucky as their next head coach? I don't see Bruce Pearl on this list, by the way.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. I guess if they didn't show interest in Bruce Pearl, I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, I do feel like if you're Kentucky, I know it didn't go great the last few years, but you got Calipari at a pretty young age, and maybe you just, you know, you're thinking in terms of a little bit more, you know, long-term fix. Maybe Bruce – what is Bruce Pearl? Okay, so Bruce Pearl is – he's about to turn 65. So, okay. I mean, I guess, you know, if you get someone in their 40s or 50s, you'd feel a little better about it. Maybe that's part of it. You know, I Mike DeCourcy had a good kind of column on the candidates and stuff, and he made a good point, you know, going through – it's like – you know, Oates, of course, has already turned it down. You know, Hurley now has told Kyle Tucker, no way is the quote, which I'm not surprised by. Obviously, Jay Wright's like, get away from me, Barkley. Stop asking me these questions on the set about the Kentucky job or whoever asked him. But you may, and Scott Drew has seemed like the, but of course he's doubtful of that. Like, why is he leaving what he has at Baylor? Again, I think, I know some Kentucky fans are just like, it's Kentucky. I mean, what are you talking about? But, you know, some of that doesn't matter as much, and some of the pressure and fishbowl nature of it doesn't – like, it isn't offset by the advantages, you know? If you're at a Baylor, again, what is his situation? Do you have a good resources situation? You certainly have a less pressure situation, and maybe you love living in Texas, you know? So what about – you know, Mark Pope is the one that DeCourcy threw out there, yep. And I think that's a really interesting one. Has done very well at BYU. For people who don't remember Mark Pope, I mean, he was a captain, like a really good big for the Rick Pitino 96 Kentucky National Championship team, one of the great teams, you know, for the Kentucky fans who are getting after me about Arkansas being the team of the 90s. Those Kentucky teams that followed that stretch for Arkansas, incredible teams, Antoine Walker and those guys. And he's been really good at BYU. Maybe it's something like that that makes more sense. You could always go Pitino, 71 years old.
Rick Pitino, plus 2,000 odds to be the coach at Kentucky, tied with Kelvin Sampson, Scott Padgett, and Shaka Smart, also tied at plus 2,000 odds.
Where's Scott Padgett?
He is assistant to the head coach at Mississippi State. Assistant coach.
So it's purely just because he's a – I was going to say, I didn't think he was a head coach. Yeah, that's a weird one.
He's tied with Rick Pitino on the odds.
Yeah, how about that? You know, Shaka Smart is – that's an interesting one. And obviously, he hasn't had the tournament success since he took VCU to Final Four. He hasn't had the tournament success and didn't go great at Texas. He goes to Marquette. They've had really good teams. He got to the second weekend this year. He's pretty good, man. I mean, he's a pretty good coach. And again, it's a younger guy. That I could see that sort of being that once they get through this, all these people who are the obvious candidates turning them down, I could see him being potentially somewhat of interest in this.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
You know, obviously they made some plays. We had a hard time staying in front of them at the end of the day. I'm just sick and tired of our guys getting smashed down there. Smashed! Oh, we'll get ready to play Tennessee. We're incredibly outmanned at the end. Had four guys on the bench in foul trouble. Joke!
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. The beautiful audio clip of Bruce Pearl. Got a lot of Bruce Pearl conversations going on right now, Joe. It's fun stuff.
We do. You sent a really nice gif of Bruce Pearl flexing. Wait, was that when he went to the Lady Vols game?
This was at Auburn. This was a more recent one. So he's done this multiple times.
Yeah, he loves to take his shirt off and hang around college kids. All right.
Apparently so.
Yeah, Michelle Perry it's a Hurley or bust. I hate to bust the bubble. By the way, we can't call her Michelle Perry anymore.
Well, I guess not.
We got Shirley. If they get Hurley, she's Shirley. But they're not going to get Hurley, so we'll have to. How about Michelle?
Michelle, I like that.
Michelle.
That's good.
There we go.
That's good.
Yeah, she's down on Bruce Pearl. Hurley or bust, probably not going to be either of them, I guess. So we'll see. But I'm going to talk today about college basketball too. And look, I kind of hate to do this, but I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Because I'm watching last night's game, and I'm saying to myself, my God, Tennessee would have had a much, much better chance in this game against UConn.
Oh, boy.
Now, I'm not saying Tennessee would have beat UConn, so someone will probably, you know, take that out of context and run with it. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that Tennessee on an A-plus night from Tennessee with a B night from UConn wins the Natty last night. And certainly Tennessee has a better chance at a good game than Purdue did. So if you don't believe me, I understand that Purdue just beat Tennessee. And Purdue beats a lot of teams with the guy who just is tough to deal with. But let's go to the matchups. Because Purdue just was terrible with the matchups all over the floor. Because Purdue, I mean, I see these not too early or whatever, these way too early top 25s, which are hilarious now with the portal. And I'm seeing Purdue in the top 10. What? No, guys. He's got a good, solid program. They'll always be good. This team is, without Zach Edey, this team is, you know, it's maybe a bubble team? Maybe? I mean, let's be real. So let's go to the matchups. Josiah James, he erases Alex Caraban. That's a great matchup for Tennessee at the four. Zakai Ziegler's all over Tristan Newton like Purdue had no chance to be. Santiago Vescovi, flu free by now. That's a good size matchup for Cam Spencer. But even better than that, Jemiah Mashek comes off the bench, and he's all over Spencer. And he's probably all over Newton, and you could throw him on Stephon Castle. You've got defensive matchups on the perimeter that are totally different than what Purdue was doing last night with their drop coverage and just basically had to let the guards have their way. Tennessee is pressuring. Tennessee is all over UConn. I'm very fascinated to see how that works out. And Jordan Gainey off the bench is key too. Mashek plays a ton. One guy from UConn last night, Diarra, played more than 5 minutes off the bench. The Vols have more depth. They have the athleticism to match up at different spots. The big issue, yes, it is at center. Of course, I haven't gotten to that yet, but let's get to that. Donovan Clingan is not Zach Edey. He's not 7'4", 304 with a polished, efficient post game. He's 7'2", 280, and he dunks lobs and cleans up things, and he's going to get drafted. Like, you know, I mean, he's got great length. Obviously, UConn was able to single up Edie more than anybody else is able to, which erased, I mean, Purdue couldn't get a three-point shot off, right? So he was a big matchup for them last night. But the Vols, Adu, that's a bad matchup for Clingan. But Awaka off the bench and JP Estrella, they can handle him strength-wise. Then Adu's a better matchup when Samson Johnson's in the game, okay? Have I talked you into this yet?
Sure.
But here's the thing that we haven't talked about. They have nobody to guard Dalton Connect. They have nobody. And look, that doesn't make them different than anyone else. But, like, you know who would be the perfect matchup to guard Dalton Connect that I've seen in college basketball this year?
Who's that?
And it's Josiah James.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He has the size, strength, and lateral quickness to not let him just totally bully him and just post up on him, to not just let him blow by him. Because if you put Caravan on Connect, he's blowing by him. You put whoever, put any of those guards. You know, you put Spencer is probably what he would do. He's still gonna be able to physically move Spencer and get shots over him. He's a matchup nightmare, and he would have been for UConn too. So, look, if Tennessee played UConn last night, I think we'd be talking about UConn and all that stuff. But I think we would have had a much more entertaining game. And I had that pang last night of, gosh, we got robbed. And I'm not going to get into we got robbed because of the refs and all that. I did have to enjoy Purdue fans last night. Like, the message board genius was like, oh, my God, the refs are just out to get us. It's fixed. They don't call any – have some courage and call a foul on UConn. I mean, I had to laugh at that. But, you know, the officiating discussion around Purdue isn't going to change on my end. But, man, I was kind of sad last night thinking of what could have been.
I got a texter that says, Joe, your Tennessee prediction ranks right up there with Stillman's mock draft. Another texter says, where'd it go? There's a lot of text rolling in now. Here it is. Rex,
I see one that says,
a homer stance. They had the opportunity to beat Purdue and lost twice. Get out of here with your orange glasses. Just from an unnamed texter.
Yes, there we go. I saw someone else says a small town radio should be broadcasted in Knoxville. Yes. It's actually broadcast is the past tense of that too. It's not broadcasted. Now that's a small town grammar usage there, buddy. look, it's matchups. Okay, Purdue beat Tennessee. They couldn't deal with the toughest matchup of the day, and they did not get. And look, when it comes down to it, if you really want to isolate one thing in that game that if Tennessee could change it, they would. It's just that Zakai Ziegler's shots go down. Like three, four more of his shots go down, and he has a regular shooting day, and they win. But matchups is what it's all about. And in terms of matchups, Tennessee, there you go. Tennessee is a better matchup for UConn than Purdue. Doesn't mean Tennessee's better than Purdue. We saw Purdue beat them, like you said. But every team matches up with other teams differently, and yes, we would have absolutely had a better game last night from Tennessee. And by the way, we got a better game from Alabama, which is a totally different animal when it comes to matchups. But so, you know, like we saw a different SEC team, which by the way, Tennessee dominated this year. That's how it works. Matchups. One team.
WHMR.
In the morning.
The Homer.
Love it. Love it.
So let me ask you this, because this is really fascinating to me. What sort of a player in the NBA do you think Edie is going to be? He's 7'4". He's massive, obviously. But do you think he can carve out a significant role for himself in the NBA?
I think he's a backup center who can come off and give you some points in the post and give you a little rim protection. But you saw it last night, you know, with what UConn did, putting him in the ball screens. And, you know, that's what Purdue does. They play that drop coverage, and, you know, he was able to get a few blocks. But it's just, like, once they really got him moving and they had Samson Johnson in there, those lobs for dunks were so easy. And he wasn't able to recover back to the roller when you roll hard. So he's going to be a defensive line. Like, NBA team's going to pick him apart in the pick and roll. So I don't think he's going to be, like, a starter heavy minutes guy, but he'll be on a team. He'll be part of a backup unit, and he'll score points on people. I mean, shoot, man, there were times last night when I'm like, just go up and dunk. Like, you can dunk on him, you know. And he didn't do it, but Yeah, it's going to be. I've seen some people think he's going to be great. He's not. Defensively, they're gonna really take advantage of him. But also, people who think he's just like have to play in Europe or something. No, I mean he's 7'4". Someone will pick him and he'll help them a little bit.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Alex Doherty from the Tennessean. A big one tonight for the Nashville Predators against the Winnipeg Jets. An opportunity to clinch a playoff berth for the ninth time in the last 10 seasons. We'll get Alex's thoughts on that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.